Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, Rochester. This is June 9th, 2018, and you lucky souls, as Nick would say, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick is taking a well-deserved Saturday off just to catch up on stuff. Once in a while, we all like to do that. And so you're stuck with Steve and I this week, and again, we want you to do the routine, pick up the phones and give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, or you can text us at 585-209-9010. And as we've always said, the only dumb question is one you don't ask. Oh, I was noticing in the news, I love how they accidentally leak information out.
Yeah.
And what I'm referring to is now the new Google Pixel 3. I mean, the 2 is just out, and it's been out for what, maybe 7-8 months? And, you know, they're already leaking out the 3, and of course, they're already saying both of them are going to be a little bit bigger screen, a little bit better camera, and everything else, but even phones now are getting to the point.
They're pretty well plateaued.
Yeah. Just like the PCs and everything else. You know, they can only do so much.
Yeah. What else do they? We don't know what else they can do until someone invents it and we decide we want that.
Yeah. And that you really need it. I mean, as it is, you know, I call it the face down era now. Because if you notice, and I notice this driving around the city, because that's what I do for a living now, drive around, and you constantly see folks with their faces down, walking, staring at their phone.
Yep.
Because they've forgotten how to socialize. I've even seen it at go out to a diner or dinner, and here's a couple, they're having a real nice dinner. What are they both doing? Sitting there staring at each other. You know, once in a while, I'll look up, and meanwhile, they're typing away on their phones.
They forget the social in person, and they're just doing the social on the internet. And hopefully, they're not you know, messaging each other back and forth across the table. That would be interesting. We've had to do that with my son, though. He's upstairs in his room. We have to message him to come down because he doesn't hear us when we. But yeah, so it's you can socialize in person, you know, IRL in real life, as well as you can socialize on the internet.
Yeah, like I say, you see more and more of it, and it's really becoming the dumbing down of. Matter of fact, I pasted on Facebook one that was great. This kid going for an interview, and you know she's sitting there and she's working on her phone, you know, and I think it's gone viral. A lot of folks have seen this.
You know, we need internet. You know, what are you familiar with? Word? No. Excel? No. PowerPoint? No. You know, Windows? No. Well, then what internet computer things can you do? Oh, I know all of them. Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat.
Yeah. Well, how are you going to get it? I just ask Google.
Yeah.
They think, you know, that it can do their job, and then she's so horrified because he doesn't meet the expectations. Yep. And, well, where's HR?
And you know, we start at 8 in the morning. I don't understand that. What do you mean? At 8? I don't understand that. I don't go to bed until 3 or 4, so I do my best work about 10:15. You know, 10:45, I'll be in.
Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what. We already got a call. Let's talk to Larry. Hello, Larry.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm getting in early today.
I guess so, sir. How are you doing?
We're doing good. I have two questions for my Mac. First of all, is it possible to save a document to iCloud and to the document folder simultaneously?
Generally, no, unless you're using iCloud desktop. So the iCloud Drive folder is separate from the desktop folder,
uh-huh.
But you can turn on a feature called iCloud Desktop and Documents. And so everything on your desktop and everything on your documents folder is automatically always synchronized to the cloud.
Oh.
But because people tend to have a lot of stuff on their desktop and documents,
right,
you may end up needing to purchase more cloud space because you only get 5 gigabytes free. And so that's a choice. The advantage of using iCloud Desktop is all of your files will sync to all of your devices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want that, that's great. Or you can just use iCloud Drive, which syncs only the certain files you put in there to your other devices.
Oh, because I still like to have stuff on my computer at times. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is syncing. It's not backup. So if you delete a file, it's deleted from the cloud. If you make a change, the change is done in the cloud. But it does synchronize so that you can see those items on other computers.
Okay. All right. I took fast notes here. I'm going to try that when I hang up. Second question. I noticed in one of the latest updates, I now have something called Recents. And when I open it up, in Finder, it's just loaded with all kind of files I don't even know that I looked at recently. So what I want to know, is this just in RAM, or is it taking up space on my hard drive? What?
Yeah, the Recents list will find by date things that were recently modified. They changed it from all, so it used to be all my files, which was just too much. You know, all your files on your computer is probably thousands and thousands of them.
Right.
So they changed that to recent in one of the 10.13 updates, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't create a new list. It does a search by date modified. So it's like a smart folder. So there's a feature called smart folders that you create yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say list every picture or list every Word file that I've edited in the last 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so recent is just a smart folder of files with the date modified in, you know, I forget what their definition of recent is. And so, you know, I look at my recent list, it goes back about 6 years, so it's not too recent.
Well, I'm looking at it and wondering if this is something I even need. I mean, I never look at this thing as near as I know.
Yeah, and the other thing Apple did is by default, when you make a new empty Finder window, it will show you your recent list. And I understand the reasoning, you know, because you probably want to open a recent file again. But in the Finder preferences, you can change that so that when a new window opens, you can tell it what folder to view. But the things in your recent folder are files on your computer. Whatever their definition of recent is unusual. The fact is they are your files, so you can delete them if you want. It's searching your drive. It's not actually showing a second copy of it.
Oh, so but if I deleted that, I would actually be deleting that file from the drive, right?
Correct. Yes, the recent list is just it shows you those files. They are the real files.
Okay, because I was mightily tempted to go in here and start deleting.
Yeah, well, I don't need that. You know, I don't need that now.
Okay.
And then suddenly you need it in a month, and it's gone.
Okay.
But you have a backup drive, so you do have a backup drive. Right?
I am backing up, so.
You can get it back when you need to, yep.
All right, well, those were the two questions I had, and I wanted to get in early today and figure that out because I've been bugged by this thing. I look at it, and it's just loaded with files.
Yeah, it's better than the all files it used to be, but still, you know, not as useful as it could be.
Okay. Well, thank you. I figured I would get an answer, so I guess I'll just leave it alone, and I'll just go to this iCloud desktop thing and, you know, bring myself up to speed to that.
You can hide the recent folder from the sidebar if you want to. Again, in the Finder preferences, you can turn off recent, or command drag it out of the sidebar in order to remove it so it's not there annoying you.
I think I'll hide it. You're right. If I look at it, it annoys me.
Yeah.
So I'll hide it.
Yep.
Okay, thank you guys.
Yeah.
Have a great one. Bye-bye.
So sometimes new features don't help you very much.
Yeah. But again, like you suggested there, it was hiding it just in case. You know, it's easier just a quick go over and grab it where you hit it. And use it, and then put it back in the spot.
And it's important to know if it's the real file or just a shortcut.
Yep.
We've had a lot of people delete the shortcut think they're deleting the shortcut. They delete the real file.
Mm-hmm.
Or they bat. We had a poor gentleman that was so sad. He lost his Quicken Finance file. And so he brought in this stack of CDs that he's been faithfully backing up his Quicken file for years. Turns out he was backing up a shortcut to the Quicken application.
Not the actual data file.
Not the data file. So I can almost see if it was a shortcut to the data file would be half better, but it was a shortcut to the application, not the data.
Because that's the thing. I mean, it's right there. And I mean, I use Quicken and every week.
Yep.
I do it manually just so I know it's done.
Yeah.
And what I do is I sit there and tell it, all right, back it up. It puts the file out on my desktop.
Yep.
So then that way I copy it over to my hard drive. Copy it on up to the cloud. Because that's one of the files that I put up on Google Storage that eats up a little bit of my data. But there's still so much I can still put up there out of the 15 gig because... You know, I store all my photos. And matter of fact, I just did the new backup, procedure, Google backup. And I told it, any of the other files that I had, because I had some spreadsheets and that type of stuff that I use. And I said, all right, when you're moving them on up, convert them. And it converts them to Google Docs.
Yep.
Because like we've said before, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, they've built those up so much, unless you're some professional or into law and everything else, and you need these special templates and all that other stuff. Basic Google Docs does everything that you use Word, Excel, and PowerPoint for the average person.
Yeah. And some people have a difficulty distinguishing between the application and the document. So we hear all the time, people buy a new computer, they want us to move their files. Well, where are your files? They're in Word. No, what folder did you save them into?
Yep.
I didn't. Well, you did. The first time you save a file, it asks you what folder to put it in. And both Apple and Microsoft default to the documents folder, which is handy. But you tell it what folder to go in. And then when you want to open it again, you go back to that folder.
Yeah. And that's where I tell folks, they'll sit there and they'll partition a hard drive. And that's all good. But here's one tip that you might want to consider doing, folks. In dividing up that hard drive, keep your programs, say, on the C drive. Move all your documents, photos, and everything else and point them to a folder, say, on the D partition. That way, when you go to backup, all you simply have to do is tell any program, backup my D drive. You don't have to know anything else. It backs up everything that's on the D drive. So if all your photos are there, documents, anything that's precious that you cannot live without, you just set it up. And all the programs will allow you to do that. Even in Word, you can go in and say, in under settings, where to save your files.
Right. So you have to tell it to save to that D drive.
And it's well worth the time to go into each one of those programs. It's the same with Quicken. You can tell Quicken, all right, I've made this drive over here, this partition, and I back up my Quicken files to there.
Makes it a lot easier to back up everything.
So much simpler.
Another drive. Don't make a partition to be your backup because it's the same drive that when that drive fails, you lose both.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've had plenty of folks, run into that issue, too, that, they think that they're backing up the data, and they just backed it up to a partition, and if that hard drive goes south on them, well, there that goes, too. All right, tell you what, we got to take a short break here, but you know what? We'll be back again in just a few moments, but, pick up the phones, give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, and we'll get back to you in just a few minutes with more of your questions and hopefully some more information right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And, excuse me, before we go back to the phones, one thing we should mention and do this ahead of time, to kind of give the other folks out there a heads up, next Sunday is Father's Day. So if you're going to go out and looking for the gift for Dad and or Grandpa or whomever, we're kind of giving you a week's notice because there's a lot of cool stuff out there, tablets and everything else, and might want to think about it a little ahead of time. But tell you what, we got a caller on the phone. Let's go to the phones, and we got Tom from Pittsford. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. Yesterday on my landline, I got a call from Apple. It came up, it said Apple Incorporated. So Wendy from Apple informed me that my iCloud had been account had been compromised and that I needed to press 1 to talk to a tech. So the tech gets on the line, and he wants to get into my computer. And I explained to him that I'm running a PC. I don't even have an Apple. That's just on my iPad. But no, he needs to get into my computer so he can fix this problem because it's been corrupted and bad players are looking to get into my accounts and steal all my information.
Which is technically true because that's what he's doing on the phone right then.
Yeah, he's not lying. He's telling you the truth. He's trying to break into his computer.
Yep.
I said, "No, you aren't one of those bad people, are you?" He's like, no. We're the good guys. We're going to fix it.
Yep. So we've seen the fake Microsoft tech support for a while, and I guess I should be flattered that now we're getting fake Apple tech support,
yeah,
too.
That's usually,
I got four of them yesterday.
Wow.
Well, you just tell them this. You were born at night, just not last night.
What I do is I see how long I can keep them on the phone.
Oh, that's fun, too. Yeah.
Waste their time so they don't do somebody else. One thing we've also heard of people doing, saying, I'm recording this call for, what's the phrase? They tell you when they're recording for performance.
Training purposes.
For training, yeah, I'm recording this call for training purposes. And that usually gets them to hang up pretty quick. But, yeah, I like the idea of stringing them out on the phone as long as you can so they don't bother somebody else.
And I just wanted to call in so that you could inform everybody to watch because it came up on my landline.
Yep.
It said that it was Apple.
Yeah, they're spoofing the call ID so that they can seem more legitimate. Also, we're seeing them spoof call IDs to give an ID that's in your same exchange.
Yeah, 585.
Yeah, so you think it's somebody local that you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I think it was the same guy. Last week he was working for the IRS, so he must have a new job.
Yep. What's been happening is because there's so many of these fake phone calls, the real companies can't call you anymore. Even if they ever did, you usually go on their website or you call them and arrange for a call back. But they can't do cold calling anymore because it's all fake. So yeah,
and everybody's got caller ID now.
Yep. So once more, the bad guys have ruined it for the good guys.
And most of the bigger companies, let's face it, unless you put a call into them and have them call you back, they're not calling you.
Yeah.
And they're not paying attention to whether your computer is infected. Seriously? The
Apple
millions
is
of computers
anytime they want to be.
No.
The billions of computers that are out there.
Yeah,
and they just picked you.
They dial every number in sequential order and they'll find a person and they'll find someone that falls for it.
Mm-hmm.
We see them in our shop.
Oh, it's born it
all the
happens.
Time.
And it's hourly.
Oftentimes, it's elderly people who aren't that computer savvy.
Hey,
easy here. Yeah. Well, yeah, not you. You.
I still have my Netscape account.
You caught him. Yep. Good. But yeah, so it's and we've seen people. It's interesting. You recognize the fact that you have a Microsoft PC and it was Apple calling. We've seen people. Most of our customers are Apple users, so when Microsoft calls, tech support, and they say, "Well, you don't have anything for Microsoft. Why did you want to give them your credit card number?"
Well, we had it right here in the studio. Nick's using his Chromebook.
Yes,
he was using his Chromebook, and a warning comes up on his screen that he better call this number because his Windows machine is infected.
Yep.
I mean,
Microsoft and Apple both go in and out of my computers anytime they want. They don't ask my permission if there's an update or anything they want to install or disinstall. They just go in and do it.
Yep.
You can turn off the automatic updates, but we've seen from Microsoft that they've been ignoring that and install it anyway.
Yeah.
On the Apple side, at least, we haven't seen that if you turn off automatic updates, then they don't update. But yeah, so it's and part of the issue is that the updates are often bug fixes and security fixes, and those are things you want.
Yes.
And you, mm-hmm. you see a big exploit like the WannaCry virus was an exploit in Windows XP, and people were still running XP because they hadn't upgraded. So if they'd have upgraded, they would have been safe from that specific vulnerability. So I can understand companies wanting to keep it updated. But it's rough when the bad guys are doing the same thing. The fake Flash updates and fake Java updates. Mm-hmm. You need to install this Flash update.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah, the bright red screen. That one's
yep.
a great one. And
mm-hmm.
the deep, ominous voice.
Yep, some new ones will talk at you saying there's a problem. Don't close this window or everything on your drive will be erased.
Yep. Call this number immediately.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Don't.
Yep.
The best thing to do is, you know, these folks, you know, if... Here's the thing, and this is pretty safe to do for the most part. If you get that screen where it just freezes up your screen, you know, your machine, and you've got this blue screen, and it's giving you this warning telling you, you got to do this because your machine is infected, and you got to call this number right away. Don't do anything else or, you know, touch anything else. What my recommendation would be is go over. Pull the plug on the yep. computer. Pull the plug on the computer and shut it down. Or if it's a laptop, hold that power button down and shut it right on down. Because the most that'll happen is it's like if, say, you were working in your house and all of a sudden the power went out.
Right.
It's an interrupt. Okay.
That's the best thing to do.
Yep.
Restart your computer, and I'll almost guarantee 95% of the chance, the time, your computer's back to normal.
Yeah, you're lucky enough to be the first person to get that fake message. And then the website owners and advertising networks have figured it out and removed it,
yep.
typically within a few minutes.
Yep. So, you know, that's the best advice I can tell folks is if when in doubt, pull a plug.
Yep.
That's, you know, the worst case scenario, oh, you lose that page. Big deal. If it's that important, you can always search for it and go back to it.
Yeah, it's not that important.
Yeah, you got it. Amen to that one, Tom.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yep.
And on the robocalls, the problem is often that the people are transient. Well, mm-hmm. you know, so we'll set up a company, make a million calls, and then close the company, and you can't find them.
They're
again.
Gone.
Although recently the FCC did find a guy in Miami, and he was accused of making 100 million phone calls in 3 months. So he's doing better than a million calls a day, selling fake timeshares, and he got hit with a $120 million fine, because that's all the FCC can do is fine you, and so he just ran a few million more phone calls.
To pay for it.
To pay for it. But actually, no, he came back to, came to court to get the charges reduced and the fine reduced. $120 million.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because he was in Miami. So he was inside the U.S. So
that's unusual. Because usually they're just offshore.
Yep.
Yep.
And every now and then there's someone like this will get caught and shut down. And then there's a lull in the spam and robocalls for a week or so until the next group.
Till they move to their new location and get set up again.
Yeah.
All right. One other thing I wanted to explain and kind of go over, because a lot of folks are like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. You just got a vendetta against Microsoft and all that. What I'm referring to, folks, is some folks were talking about what programs we recommend for, you know, spyware and malware and anything else. And there's other folks out there that are recommending Windows Defender. All right, my take, and this is strictly my take, it's not the station's, anybody else's, you know, this is my opinion. And I've been in the business over 40 years.
I try not to think about it.
Yeah. 40 years. Okay. And I'm basing it upon this because, you know what? If it happened once, I'd say, yeah, okay. Yeah. Let it go. Happens twice. I'm getting awful leery. And what I'm talking about is the confidence in Microsoft. They have totally dissolved any trust that I have in them in keeping things up to date. It's just like their antivirus software, and especially this software for Defender. Microsoft does not update that weekly.
Or daily. And so sometimes I've updated something in the morning and gone back in the afternoon and it gets updated again.
Yeah. These other programs will update constantly. They're always looking to update. That's their job. Microsoft, it's a side business for them, so they don't worry about it.
And a lot of it is that Windows Defender isn't a bad antivirus, but viruses as a trend are on a downturn, and we're seeing more and more problems with malicious software, fake tech support, fake advertising, fake flash updates,
yeah.
And Windows Defender just can't defend against that.
And that's why I do not recommend it. I've had super anti-spyware, like you said, update twice in one day because yep. something else came out. That's their job, and that's all they do. Microsoft, that's just enough. And too many other products, Microsoft has picked it up and then, oh, yeah, we're not doing that anymore, and walked away from it, leaving everybody else high and dry. So if you want to put your confidence in a product that's going to be updated once in a while, and don't get upset if you got to go back because it's reinfected. Because you're using a product that, you know, is free and they don't do that great of a job in supporting it.
And even with Microsoft's biggest intentions, you know, the 1803 update is causing tons of problems with for people.
Yes.
It's installing even though you told it not to install. You've got mm-hmm. your updates, you know, yep. Turned off. And the one thing I just heard today, the 1803 update does not have the mitigations for Spectre and Meltdown in it that Microsoft released in the 1709 update. So if you had the previous Windows 1709, you did...
Negates it?
Yeah, you did the Spectre and Meltdown mitigations. Mm-hmm. When you install 1803, it removes them. And they don't have an update for 1803.
To put it back.
Yeah.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Victor, I believe, from Irondequoit.
How you doing, Dave?
Good. Yourself, sir?
Not bad. Thank you. I've been using the SpyBot Search and Destroy, the free version, for the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that they offer the pay version. Is it really worth it to get the pay version, or can we get by with just the free version?
I don't know that one specifically, but in general, what we've seen, Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, the other ones we've seen, the free versions you run manually, and that's fine. You
right.
just have to run them manually. The
mm-hmm.
pay versions run automatically.
Yeah.
And for some people, that's worth it. You know, paying, what, it's usually just $20-$30 a year. So
yeah. And here's the other thing, Victor, which we have been big supporters for decades, a couple decades. And remember back in the days with shareware and everything else. Same with these programs. It costs money and time for these folks to develop these programs and keep them updated.
And if enough people pay for it, they can still do a free version.
Yeah, and to, you know, if it's handy for you, it's doing the job, it's saving your machine from being into the, say, the shop constantly for this infection or that infection, like Steve said, it's well worth the few extra bucks to pay for the subscription, have it do it automatically, and just like being a member here, you're a proud, you know, a supporter of that writer of the program in keeping him going and doing a great job to keep your machine safe.
Well, my main question is, you guys have been saying for a long time, don't have too many things run.
Right.
And I've got Super Anti-Spyware, the pro version, that runs all the time. And I was just wondering if this was going to conflict with it.
Probably not. You don't want them running at the same time.
Yeah, but how do you know, Dave? I mean, they're running in the back. I mean, how do you know when one's running?
All right. If you look down in the lower right-hand corner of your taskbar,
yeah.
it'll tell you what programs are running there. And if you're running Super Anti-Spyware, you're going to see that little beetle down there. Okay,
right.
And any other programs that are what we used to call TSRs, Terminate and Stay Resident, and it's in the background. So it would be in that little box of all your programs that are currently running. So you can set, a lot of these programs you can set up to not automatically run at startup.
Either run at startup, sometimes it will say scan on demand.
Yep.
Or scan on file open.
Yep. So you can pick and choose. Like, I have Super Anti-Spyware running all the time. Malware Bytes, I set it up to scan when I open it. So that way both programs aren't conflicting with each other.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to have to look and see what I have.
Yeah. Over there, like I said, yeah, in that little right-hand corner, you can click on that, and it'll open up, and you can see all the programs. As a matter of fact, if you hover over each one of them, it'll tell you the name of the programs.
Right, yeah, yeah, I'm aware of that. I just didn't want too many things running at once.
Yeah.
Because I know that's not good. I'm going to check and see what I have on the startup.
Yep. Because a lot of times, one of the programs will see the other program, the definitions, and think that's the actual virus. So that's one of the problems of running too many at the same time.
Okay.
So that,
all right, thank you, guys.
You're welcome, Victor. Have a great one. All right, tell you what, we got to take a short break again, but we will be back with more of your questions right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, folks, to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Sound Bites. Nick is taking a much-deserved Saturday off, and he will be back for sure next week, so we encourage you, though, to pick up the phones, give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, or you could also text us. Our text line is 585-209-9010, and the questions can come in, pop them up, and we will get to them when we can. But we were, again, talking about support and that type of stuff. Again, I can't say enough. If you find a particular program, folks, and like I say, we've been saying this, I think, since we started. If you find software that you like, it's a freebie, and it's doing a good job for you, and you use it for more than a year, which is a lot, and if it's really doing the job for you, then consider paying for it.
Or just a lot of the free software will accept donations.
Yeah.
Most of the time we see people just want the software for themselves and will decide to release it because other people find it useful. So it's not necessarily their full-time job. But there are a lot of independent app developers now that it is their full-time job writing these smaller apps. And what we're seeing is that just distributing apps on the internet make them cheaper. So you pay $20-$30 directly to the author instead of paying $100 at the store for a box.
Yeah.
The store takes half of it, and then the distributor takes half of that, and then the publisher takes half of that, and the programmer that actually wrote the program is lucky to get $10 at the end.
Yeah, exactly. They all got to take their cut there. And so if you support these programs, like the Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, ENU Virus programs, and everything else, because AVG is free in that. But again, support it, because you know what? It's free. Yeah. And if you enough folks don't wind up supporting him and paying for it, he's going to say, why bother your time? It's just like you folks out there. If you were to do something and doing it week after week, and hoping that people are going to do it, but then nobody steps up to the plate and offers, to help support you, you're going to continue wanting to do that year after year? I don't think so.
And that's where a lot of companies on the Soundbites website and then on the Security Tango website, we have donate buttons, so you can help donate to pay for server costs.
Yeah, it helps Nick defray a lot of that because that takes his time. And doing, keeping that all up, that it's not free.
And now there's services like Patreon that a lot of internet publishers are using so that you can donate money to a website or a podcast or a art project that you like. So we can all become patrons of the arts.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just like this program, and that's why, when we come to you folks twice a year, and you folks have been great, because we're still here, we're still on the air, we're still doing the show to, step up and become members. And I want to remind you folks, in just 2 weeks, two short weeks, the Jazz Fest starts up. And I know Rob's got quite a few tickets and passes that he's going to be handing out that if you listen to the station, you're going to be able to take advantage of it. But you know what? It's through you folks, though. We're still here. And that's why we ask during the Jazz Fest for those thousands of folks that come down And there's literally thousands of them. And I've had a number of folks over time walk up and say, I heard you say this, and I'm throwing my dollar in. Because we tell everybody, if everybody just went by the Jazz Tent there on Gibbs Street and drop in a dollar. If everybody that came to the Jazz Fest did that, we wouldn't have to have a fun drive. So please, when you get up there, you know, swing by the Gibbs Street and just drop in $1. You know, a beer or anything else is going to cost you more than that.
You're welcome to drop in more if you like.
Yes, definitely. But minimum $1. We'll gladly take any more. And, you know, you'll get to meet a lot of the DJs and that are here. Because, you know, radio, we all say we have faces for radio, and that's where we keep it. Rather not see it otherwise. But,
you know, we do have our YouTube stream running. And
yeah, that's scary enough. But please stop on down and say hello and show your support for the station and Soundbites. We'd greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
You've had some of the news.
Yeah, one of the big news stories this past week was Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, where they talk about their upcoming development plans.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that was kind of interesting this year is they didn't announce any hardware. It was all software.
Hmm.
Which is kind of the point of a developer conference. It's you see the operating systems you're going to develop apps for.
Yeah.
But Apple has used that in the past to talk about new hardware that's coming, because a lot of times the new hardware takes advantage of the new software.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it was only new software. So that means there's new hardware still coming. There's always new hardware coming. But they talked about the new versions of their iOS, watchOS, tvOS, and macOS that are coming out. I posted a wrap-up from Macworld Magazine on our website. Some big additions of FaceTime. They're now doing group chat. So you can have group video chats with up to 32 people. So they jumped past the Skype's 10-person and Hangout's 10-person and went to 32 people. I hate to see the server back end that can handle a 32-person video chat.
Do you remember when video chats... They were back in the day.
See you, see me from Columbia, was it, or Cornell?
And there was, you know, all this delay. You'd sit there and say hello, and then 10 seconds later, you'd hear that over the other end, hello?
Yeah. Get one or two frames per second on your video camera.
Yeah. Oh.
They've added new animated emoji or animoji on the iPhone X, and they've also added Memoji, they're calling it, where you can build a cartoon avatar of yourself. So now it will superimpose your avatar over your face in the chats, and the lips match. And
sounds like Second Life.
Yep. One of the big things they added was tongue detection.
Tongue detection.
So it can detect when you're sticking out your tongue. And your avatar will stick out your tongue too. Yep. They've also addressed some of the criticism about the phones being too addictive. They've added a feature called They've added a feature called Screen Time, where you can set how much screen time an app is allowed to do, especially handy for kids. But even for yourself, you know, you can say you only get an hour of Instagram a day or an hour of Facebook a day, and it will warn you when you're getting close to the end of your allocated time.
And that'd be great for kids.
Yep, great for kids. And you can extend that time if you have the password. So that's pretty handy. They're increasing the do not disturb functions that right now will turn off your notifications and phone ringing at bedtime. They're also they've added that in cars. So in the current OS version, it will recognize how fast your phone is moving. Assume you're in a car,
mm-hmm.
and turn off the notifications. And if someone tries to text you when you're in the car, it will send a text back saying, I'm driving now. I'll get back to you.
Yep. Well, my phone already does that. Yep. You know, the minute I'm into the car, it says you're in driver mode, you know, and anybody tries to text me, they get a message saying, I'm driving right now.
They've added a new timing addition. So you can say, do not disturb me for an hour. And so the one thing that I forget to do is like I'll turn my phone off when I go into the movie theater. I'll forget to turn it back on for a day or two. And then there's all those missed calls.
Yeah.
So they're adding that. Do not disturb for an hour, for 2 hours, and then it will come back. And or at your location. So when you leave the movie theater, it will automatically turn back on. They're expanding their augmented reality AR kit with a new file format to allow programs to share the AR system, and they showed off a game from one of the Disney studios, I think it was, where you could build things in virtual reality and have characters running through them and share the game among several people, each with their own iPad or iPhone, and each person saw the same augmented reality thing, which is was pretty cool.
Huh.
Siri, there's a lot of hope for Siri. One of the things that a lot of people have said is that Siri, which is Apple's voice recognition assistant, isn't as complete as Google's or Amazon's. And some of that is because of the more privacy that Apple tends to focus on, rather than looking inside of all your email and looking inside of all your shopping carts like the other companies do. Siri sometimes doesn't do as much. And so partly to address that, they've created a service they're calling Siri Shortcuts that come from a program a company they bought called Workflow, which was an automation program where you could stream a sequence events together to do certain things. So they're adding that into Siri. So now Siri is going to, in essence, become programmable. So you can tell Siri to do an action, and it can do actions from different applications that integrate with this workflow. And that's also going to expand out to the HomePod as well. So right now, Siri on the HomePod can only pretty much play music, because that's what it does. Siri on the Apple TV can only play videos, because that's what it does. So they've had these different silos where, depending on what device you're on, Siri does things differently. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be sort of integrated a little more together, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's well needed.
Yep. And they also answered there's a lot of rumors that the macOS and iOS might be merging together. Android, Google's doing that with Chrome. So the Chromebooks are going to be able to do Android apps.
They already are.
Yep. And so what Apple is doing is they're not merging the OSs. They put a giant no up on the screen. But what they are adding is the ability for macOS to run iOS apps, kind of like what Google's doing with Android.
Okay.
And they've started with two or three iOS apps, the Stocks app, two or three different iOS apps, the News app, have come into the next Mac OS, which is going to be macOS Mojave, going along with their California desert themes at the moment. It's going to have some of those iOS apps as a first step. And it will eventually probably be opened up to other iOS apps, so you'll be able to run your iOS apps on your Mac. And one of the first things I read is some Mac developer complaining, well, then no one's going to write Mac apps anymore because you can just run iOS apps on it. But the platform is different. The screen sizes are different.
Yeah.
Even when the app is the same, a company makes a Mac app and an iOS app, they're different for the different interfaces.
Yeah, they gotta be.
Same thing with Chrome apps and Android apps.
They're totally different.
Designed for their
platform. Folks, they get frustrated because they'll go, well, it doesn't look like this, this when I run this app on my phone versus running it on my desktop, they'd look totally different. Yeah, because, hello, you're running this app on a phone.
You got a 4-inch screen versus a 30-inch
screen. Yeah, and the processing power. Hello, folks. Yeah, they got to cut some features down. Well, I could do this or that. Yeah, you're not going to get all the full features. I don't care what OS you're using or system. It's not going to be the same as on the phone versus your tablet or your laptop.
Yep.
Just won't happen.
They're also adding a dark mode where your screen is generally dark. So right now, you open your web page and it's bright white, blinding white with black text. So now it's going to be a little darker page. So especially in when it is dark, it won't be so blinding. And it will take a advantage of time of day. So as it gets later in the day and darker sunlight,
based upon your time zone,
the changes will be affected on your desktop. So that you can have a desktop picture, and during the day it's a daytime scene, and during the night it's a nighttime scene.
Cool.
And the aerial screensavers that were so popular on the Apple TV, the beautiful photography of these amazing sites around the world, nobody knows where they are. So there's people that have dug into the code and figured out where these pictures were taken. Mm-hmm. Now with, you can hit a key and it will tell you where that thing is. So that's the Denali National State Park, or that's, you know, sometimes you can, the city. So like Singapore, you can tell, Dubai, you can tell, London, you can tell because of the establishing, you know, buildings, but sometimes there's a snowscape. Well, you know, where was that? No.
Yeah, well, Microsoft's got one that I'd love to. I can't find it even on my computer. When it first comes up, it's a harbor scene, and it's this long bridge, you know, like in New England or yeah. That. It's a beautiful. I'd love to have that one, but I can't. I haven't been able to locate it.
Yeah. So all these OSs are going to be available later this year. Generally, we see them in the September-October timeframe for iOS and tvOS, and maybe a little later for the Mac.
Yeah, well, hey, well, the music tells me, folks, we got to take a break. Yeah, one whole hour has gone by, and you folks listening to us just jabber on here, but you know what? Stick around, because there's another full hour still ahead. And you folks can pick up the phones and still get your questions in if you give us a call at 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. But we will be back in just a short, brief pause here. So stay tuned. And like I said, get it up, get your phone questions in right now, right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be back soon.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And again, we want to remind you folks, heads up, next Saturday, or Sunday, I don't know why I want to keep saying Saturday, maybe extend it the whole weekend, it's Father's Day. So you got to do your shopping. You got this week to do it, and get it done before Sunday, next Sunday, because otherwise, you know, the cards will all be gone and everything else.
Yep.
Oh, number of folks, I got to admit, there's been a couple times, different holidays or something like that, it's like, oh, shoot, you go rush out to get it, and the cards are so picked over. It's like, yep. Dang.
Well, I've got a problem around Valentine's Day, because my wife's birthday is the same week. And so it's hard finding birthday things around Valentine's Day. And if you want to go out for birthday dinner, you can't, because everything's booked for Valentine's Day. But and of course, I have to do two separate celebrations.
Oh, heck yeah!
And so I
read dead meat if yep. you're not.
I read a story about someone. The wife was at the birthday, the anniversary. What was it, like three or four things all happened in the same week, and the husband would still forget.
Whoa. Is he still alive?
Yeah, that's
or is he missing and there's no trace of him?
Yep. Well, speaking of missing and no trace, we talked a couple weeks ago about the VPN filter malware mm-hmm. That was attacking routers, mostly from Linksys, MikroTik, and Netgear. And the FBI even put out a public notice that you should reboot your router.
Yep. Everybody,
because that can if it is infected, rebooting it can stop it from progressing any farther. But now it turns out that they think it was much worse than previously believed. The people Ars Technica and Talos Security from Cisco were digging into it, and they found that one of the things it can do is it gets into your
firmware, right?
Your firmware. It gets into your computer. And it will change your bank account display. So if you log into your bank account, it will show you what you think the balance is.
Mm-hmm.
It has really drained the balance out the back end. And so that's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah.
And because it's going through the router, it knows all the data going back and forth. And so it's able to do something like that because it's in your router and knows what's going on. So if you have a Linksys MikroTik Netgear TP-Link or QNAP router, especially Netgear is a very popular brand, and Linksys is also a very popular mm-hmm. brand. You probably want to reboot it, check for firmware updates. And if it's been a while since you've updated it, say you're still running a G router, maybe even an N router, you might want to look into getting a new router anyway.
Yeah, yeah, doesn't hurt.
And update it as soon as you can. So that's a pretty sneaky malware where it drains your bank account, but then it shows you the actual...
You're still good.
Yeah, what you think the balance is.
Well, that's why, you know, folks, you got to do that login to your...
check your router, log into your router and check it for firmware updates.
Yeah, do that periodically because you don't want... That's the whole trouble. We get so complacent.
You plug it in. Especially you buy the router at the big box store, you plug it in, it works, and you never think of it again.
Right. But, you know, just like we've told you, you know, if something gets into your machine, causes the screen to go totally blank or comes up with a warning and all that, best thing to do then, like we said, is pull the plug on that. That's a good time to also go down and shut down your router.
Yep.
In case it's got in on some other machine, you can just shut everything down. You know, wait 5 minutes, turn your router back on, and then start turning the machines back on. That will bring everything back up safely.
Yep.
And anything else that was trying to get in there or change anything else, you know, it's like Steve was and I were saying before, you know, it's just a good practice to get into doing once in a while. Because getting complacent, just sitting, oh, yeah, I don't even think about that. Well, you should.
And we're really hoping the router companies are going to start doing automatic updates. Several of the router companies will send you a message when there's an update, but mm-hmm. then you still have to do it yourself. I read one place there's some interesting legal issues that if you buy something and then the company changes it,
mm-hmm.
that can be illegal because it's not theirs anymore. It's yours.
Oh.
So all
yeah,
I can do is tell
you. Is that
you
a matter of whether you're renting it or whether you bought it?
That's sort of
that's probably going to be the double-edged sword there.
Yeah, so that's why most of the companies, when you're setting up your router, will want your email address so they can email you firmware notices of firmware updates, but then you still have to go and do it. But a lot of times, you know, the really cheap routers you buy at the big box stores, those companies don't care. And they'll probably never update it. And the bigger issue we're now seeing is the Internet of Things. So cameras and scales,
yeah.
refrigerators. You're going to have to update the firmware in your refrigerator because there's an exploit out.
Your washing machine and dryer.
Yeah, the whole Internet of Things is just another exploit vector. And what we were recommending is that if you decide to get some of those home security cameras, especially a camera, which is, you know, looking at you all the time,
mm-hmm.
Make sure you keep it updated.
Yeah.
Check for firmware updates. Check for exploit lists. And one of the recommendations is to put it on your guest network. So if an exploit does get into your camera, it can't get into your primary network and get to your files and stuff because it's only on your guest network.
Yeah. Yeah. You folks have, you know, a lot of this they make very simple to set up and, you know, just so they can get you up and running. But sometimes you need to take the time and due diligence to set up the other stuff within it. Say, like in the routers and that, you know, setting up the wireless security and everything else. So it's just not opened up to the whole neighborhood. You know, and like Steve was saying, doing the updates periodically. That's something. You don't have to do it weekly, but at least doing it every, you know, couple of months, checking to make sure if there's a firmware update or that. Or if you do get an email, put it on your list to update it. Yeah, you don't have to do it right there that minute, but at least put it on your list to, all right, this weekend I'll do this, this, and this. You know, you got to stay on top of it, or otherwise you're going to get bitten, or you're going to be, stuff is going to be hacked. And then you're going to be calling here and saying, oh, well, I got, you know, taken for this or that. Well, we're telling you up front, you know, we can advise you. We just can't do it for you. You know, we can help you along as much as we can. We love doing it. That's why we do the show every week, is to keep you informed and other stuff going on, you know. So.
And as Nick has said, it's unfortunate, but now you have to be a network administrator in your house. You probably have several computers, smartphones, tablets, printers, routers.
Most homes, you know, have at least a couple computers, tablets, and your phones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it is nowadays. So, yeah, if you like the luxury of having all those devices, you also have to do a little homework and maintenance. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
Oh, one thing that I saw, that they're still trying to get it to come out. And I think it was just about 3 weeks ago, is that I think it's a computer. It looks like a watch.
Yeah.
And you touch it, it comes out on your arm.
Yeah.
So you can sit there and you touch the screen, and all of a sudden the screen comes out to either the left or right, and it's your desktop. And it's a little tablet, and you can sit there on your arm doing stuff.
Yeah, there are wrist computers that have a giant screen, but this one we keep seeing pictures of on the internet is it's like a projection screen.
Yeah, off to the side, left or right.
Yep.
Depending on what arm you're wearing it on, and you could sit there and do Facebook and everything else.
Yep.
It's like, that would be cool. You know, it's almost going back to the days of Dick Tracy.
Yep.
If any of the, probably younger folks don't even know what the heck I'm talking about, but that used to be a cartoon strip. Used to get on Sundays this thing called Comics.
The radio store show initially, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Dick Tracy.
Before our time.
Yeah. Well, I used to listen, maybe not before yours, but my time, I used to listen to it on the radio.
1931 it was created.
Yeah, I believe it. But we used to hear it, you know, on the radio before we got our first TV. But Dick Tracy was the big thing. You know, he had his watch that he could talk to and all that.
And we do that now.
We do that now. I mean, you know, sometimes it's scary how far things have come so fast.
And a lot of times what we see, the science fiction authors will dream up this stuff, and then little kids growing up see the science fiction shows, and then when they become adults, they make the thing they saw. So that's why we had flip phones, because Captain Kirk had a communicator that flipped open.
Yep.
It wasn't very practical, and we've moved away from them now, but that's why we had a flip phone.
But they were small and they were compact compared to and that's what they're selling that on, is because when the first phones really came out, they were called bricks, and
they were huge.
I mean, they were pretty thick. They were what, maybe 2 inches thick,
or 7 inches tall.
Yeah, and they were, you know, at least 4 inches wide, I think. And they were a big brick to carry that around. But, oh, hey, it was a cell phone.
And it didn't have a backpack.
Yeah.
Because the earlier ones had a backpack battery in it.
To go down all the way to a flip phone, it's like, whoa, this is so cool. But I still know a number of folks that still use the flip phones in that, because, again, they still work. And
they're cheap.
Yeah, and the phones nowadays, just like the PCs, they can do so much. And, you know, granted, they can keep improving the cameras and everything else, which they do a great job now. I mean, my camera on my Pixel phone, Google Pixel phone, takes a lot better pictures than my camera that I used to have from Kodak.
Yep.
I had one of those digital cameras, and it took pretty good pictures.
Yep.
But my phone does a better job.
And we're almost moving back into the flip phone arena, where ZTE has one, Samsung is working on one. It's a smartphone with two screens that fold close. And so you open it up and you've got two screens that can be one giant screen for viewing a website, or it can be two screens. You're watching a movie on one screen and, you know, reading, you know, your Twitter feed on the other screen. So ZTE has the Axon M, which looks pretty cool. So it almost looks like a laptop. So it's a laptop in the size of a phone.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the new Pixel 3 phone, I think it's 5 inches and 6 inches for the Pixel 2. And they're improving the Pixel 3 by 0.2, I believe it is, you know, in millimeters. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, that's extra screen space. And these phones are getting a little bigger and bigger. to carry around because people don't mind them. They throw them in their back pocket or, you know,
yep.
that. But they want to be able to communicate, and that's the way they do everything nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, it's on your phone.
What's interesting is that the big smartphones have pretty well killed the small tablet market.
Yeah.
Yeah, the, you know, 6, 7, 8-inch tablets are pretty well gone, mostly because you've got 5, 6, 7-inch phones.
Yeah.
So you don't need a big tablet because you've got a small tablet because you've got a big phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and they're going more towards the 8-inch, the 10-inch, and the 12-inch tablets in that. And like I say, and then if you get one of those tablets, say, with the Chrome one, and being able to, you know, use a Chromebook, again, it's easy to use. It doesn't get spyware. It doesn't get malware. And you're not paying for an operating system.
Yep.
And I've talked to a number of folks, and they say, well, how does that? I say, think of it as your old, the old systems. Remember back in the day when you used to have a CRT, and all you did was turn it on, and it would connect up to the mainframe.
Yep.
And you go, yeah.
It was a dumb terminal connected to the mainframe.
Basically, that's what a Chromebook is. You're grabbing, you know, and connecting, opening up the Chrome browser, which is connecting up to the internet.
Because pretty much the most common uses of computers these days is the internet.
Yeah, and
web
you're,
and mail and
yeah,
photos.
Your photos are all up there. Your email, what are you doing? Email, you're surfing the web. Again, you're just going up to the internet. So that's Chromebook is becoming a dumb terminal. Granted, you can bring down other apps and run games and all that type of stuff on it. Or you could, you know, there's apps for listening to the radio and listening to Jazz 90.1. You can download all those apps and that, do that on it. But, you know, this just gives you more flexibility.
It was sometimes called a thin client. So it had a little bit of processing power itself, but got most of the information from the mainframe.
All right, tell you what. We got to take a short break here. But we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright and Steve Ray taking your questions at 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And stay tuned because we'll be right back with more questions and information here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And again, we ask you folks, pick up the phones, give us a call if you got a question at hand. The number is 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And, oh, wait a minute. I've got one right here. Speaking of, somebody just decided to text in. And they say, hi, everybody. This is Bruce. I have a question about iBot software. I purchased the software, software. I purchased the software because I like the program. But I have a question about using Smart Defrag with iobit pro version defrag and having those set to automatic at the same time, or should I use or should I just use one or the other separately? That's my question. Thanks and have a nice day.
I'm not familiar with it, but in general, you don't need to defrag your drives anymore.
Yeah.
Both the NTFS used by Windows and HFS Plus used by Mac try not to let the files get fragmented in the first place.
That was the whole thing of NTFS FAT. And back in the old days with FAT32 and that, you needed to defrag continuously because your hard drive would get fragged all over the place. What we mean by that, folks, is programs would get scattered all over the hard drive here and there.
Which would make them take longer to open and close.
To load, yes. Whereas NTFS FAT, what it does is it keeps things organized, eliminating having to constantly run defrag because there used to be a tool back with Norton called a defrag, and you could sit there and watch it moving the bits around, trying to reorganize things so it would optimize your machine and be faster. It was fun to watch.
And if the power died in the middle of your defrag, your whole drive could be screwed.
So, yeah, Microsoft, though, did away for that. So, yeah, as far as defragging, I wouldn't worry about it much.
And the other issue is that the computers and hard drives are so fast now that even if there is a little bit of fragmentation, you probably wouldn't notice it anyway.
Yeah, it's terabyte hard drives. I mean, you know, seriously?
You could probably get better performance by switching to an SSD.
Yeah.
Which now, as a general rule, never defrag an SSD.
Yeah. You could if you want to mess it up totally.
Yeah. Yeah, the way SSDs write data, when it writes data to a cell, it actually damages the cell a little bit. And so the SSD itself handles something called wear leveling. So it will intentionally write data to different cells so it doesn't wear out a single cell. But because it's a solid-state drive, there's no moving parts, it can load the file virtually instantly. It doesn't have to wait for a rotating platter to spin back around so the head is back in the right place. So a lot of the maintenance we used to do on spinning hard drives you don't have to do at all and in fact shouldn't do on a solid-state drive because it can actually damage it.
Yeah. But going back to RLL drives and MFMs,
yeah.
Some of you folks, what is he saying? Yeah, those were the old drives where we had these big, thick cables that you had to hook up to, and the hard drives back then were huge compared to the drives nowadays that are so thin and so small and shove so much stuff on there. It's unbelievable.
The first hard drive I've got was 5 megabytes and was about the size of a shoebox. Because that's what it was back then. In fact, the first hard drive, I got a picture somewhere of the first IBM hard drive, was about 5 megabytes, and it was about the size of a refrigerator. There's a picture of them loading it into a cargo airplane to ship to a customer. So I get 5 megabytes, the size of a refrigerator, and now we have 10 or 12 terabytes in a little tiny paperback book size thing that you shove into your computer. So it's really amazing how small things have gotten and how high the capacities have gotten.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how technology has advanced so far. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Jason on the phone. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Great. Yourself?
Not too bad. I'm actually in Altoona, PA, so you guys know me. You were just talking about the routers and whatnot, and I know one of you guys listens to Security Now and the Edge Router X from Ubiquiti that...
Yep.
Steve recommends.
Yep.
And I was just thinking, I just set up 2 networks for a local fire company here using that and their access points. And the router is $60, not even $60, and an access point is only $85, and that's got power over Ethernet, so all you have to do is run the one cable.
Yep.
To wherever you're going to need it, and it comes with the injector. But you're looking at for a total investment of $130, and they just had a sale on them where if you got the access point and the router, it was just over $100. So it's the same price as going to Walmart. But the reason I mention that is because there's two things. One, when you remember the crack exploit that came out a few months ago.
Yep.
Within 24 hours of that being announced, Ubiquiti had a firmware update for their routers and access points just to protect them.
They're big in the high-end router world, and it's nice that they're coming out with more consumer-based routers. But the little Edge Router X is a 5-port Ethernet router, so it takes the one wire in from your internet service and gives you 4 discrete separate hardware channels. So one channel is your private network, one channel can be your guest network, one channel can be, maybe even a second guest network for your IoT stuff, and it's true hardware separation.
And one of the neat things that I found while I was doing this was the ability to configure the router and then download all the configuration parameters into an external file, and I've had to do it a couple of times. We've had power outages here that have screwed up a configuration or something in the network, and it was just a matter of logging into the router and saying, okay, upload these parameters and restart, and it's a factory reset in effect, but to the specifications that I specified configuring the network. What I was thinking is maybe for the Security Tango, you guys could do a pre-configured setup that people who wanted to wouldn't have to learn how to configure the router, but to just download the configuration and set it up. The only thing they'd have to do themselves would be pick a password.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that isn't.
We'll put that. There are open source router firmware, the Onion, no, not Onion, Tomato router, and what's the other one? DDWRT, designed for the Linksys WRT router brand lines, that you can remove the OS, basically the manufacturer put in, and load this open source software that's been vetted and strengthened by the open source community to make sure it's up to date and fully patched, and gets patches and updates frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than waiting for a company to do it. But Ubiquiti is one of the better known, better updating companies in the router market.
Yeah, and like I said, they're great because they're the high-end dealer, and they just created a router that says, okay, let's strip out all the fancy stuff and give it the same kernel. When they update it for the big guys, they've already got the firmware update for that little $50 router that you can get. Like I said, it's no more expensive buying the router and an access point than just buying the combined unit at Walmart or something like that.
Yep.
And you can find YouTube videos online to configure it. So even if you guys don't do a configuration file for people, people could just buy them from Newegg or wherever they get stuff and would be able to log on to YouTube and figure out how to set it up.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have to look into maybe setting something up.
In fact, Steve Gibson on the GRC website has several PDFs listed for people that have put together complete setup instruction working guides, which is pretty cool too.
So, just a thought for people. Like I said, I ended up, after doing these networks for the fire company, I ended up buying the hardware and doing my personal home network for the same reason, because I had an older router, just like you guys were saying, and when it came time to replace it, it's like, well, do I spend $150 at Walmart to get a decent one, or do I go and do it this way and get one that I know the company's going to back it up after I've already bought it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a deciding factor for me. So that's a thought for people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. No. Yep. Thank you.
And it was, it's amazing that the big companies will put out something for the home market.
Yeah,
knowing the margins are smaller. The big thing with an enterprise grade router is it's typically used made with much higher quality components because it has to be on and running, 24/7 for many times hundreds of people.
And I would think nowadays that's a very smart move, and because let's face it, most of the homes in the U.S. now have a router.
Yep.
Or, some type of internet connection in the homes. So, but, at least 8 out of 10 have routers.
Or they're borrowing the neighbor's Wi-Fi router without the neighbor knowing.
Yeah, because they got it wide open.
Yeah, hopefully with the neighbor's permission. Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's very common nowadays. It's just because it's part of our lives. I mean, people, their internet goes down and they're like, oh, my God. What am I going to do?
What am I going to do? Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't go.
I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm lost.
Yeah. Don't go and buy the cheapest router you can at the big box store. It probably won't be updated. It probably doesn't have very good security features built into it.
And look for the ones that, supposedly they're all of a sudden they're having a clearance sale on it because it's an old router that was outdated a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But you got a good deal on it.
I had a friend that would watch the shopping network channels religiously, and she would always call me about, oh, this computer, it's so cheap. And I look it up. Yeah, it was discontinued 5 years ago. How do they have any left to even sell?
Yeah, well, remember old Tiger Direct?
Yeah.
He'd always buy up all the old ones and offer great deals. And, they'd have bare minimum memory.
They're still around.
Are they?
Yeah. You could get really good deals on them, but you have to really know what you're doing.
Yeah, and you know, they can look good, but do you fully understand, you know, the different processors and the amount of memory in it, the size of the hard drives? Oh, what type of video card does it have? Does it have onboard? Does it have its own separate one? You know, there's a lot of factors that, you know, they don't get into in these QVC channels and all these other places where you get, oh, great deals and all this stuff. You got to know what you're buying and what you want to do.
Yep. And a lot of people will not understand the differences in the different specs, and you try to comparison shop between two different stores, and you can't, because the companies intentionally ship different products to that brand of store.
Yeah, and the motherboards are totally different.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Celeron processors versus Intel processors versus AMDs.
We have people who will come into the store frequently, and they ask, I just want a simple computer. You know, I want to surf the web, write some email, and maybe play a few games on Facebook. Well, you may have just added a comma to your price. You start saying you want to play a few games. Now you need a little bit better video card, and you probably need a little more RAM, and yeah, it's just a simple computer to do simple things. Oh, and yeah, play some games.
Yeah, that all is a big factor of it. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Bob from Henrietta. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, just like to second that guy's recommendation for Ubiquiti equipment.
Yep.
I'm very happy with it. My head-end router is actually a Linux box, but the wireless access point's one of their toys, and it works very well.
Yeah, the Ubiquiti brand is really good, and it's starting to make its way down into the home consumer market as one of the known brands there.
Hey, you're not going to get it as cheap as you can get some other stuff, but you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Yeah, you can have it cheap or good. Pick one.
Hey, I just wanted to mention that. That's all.
Great. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the brands that are popular are often the ones that are on sale. And why are they on sale? Because they're getting replaced by something else, or they had a problem with it. And you go to a company, you know, even the well-known companies, you know, Linksys, Netgear, Belkin, and you look at their router page, and they sell 100 routers.
Yeah.
Why? From $50 to $500.
Because they can.
Yeah, because they can.
Yeah.
But how in the world is an average person going to know what to buy? I have a hard enough time trying to figure out what the difference is between all these different models. And you know, what's the best to buy depending on the size of the house you're trying to put into, and can matter on how many antennas it has. If your house is just a straight line or has corners and turns in it, you may need to have something slightly different.
Yeah, or like my house, you know, and Nick's house, which has old plaster and, you know, chicken wire in it.
Yep.
So we create a Faraday cage. And let's go back to the phones. We got Mark from Greece. Go ahead, Mark.
Good afternoon. Going back to the gentleman that texted you about the IoBit.
Yeah.
They're not bad programs. As a matter of fact, I use a couple of them. That automatic defragger thing, it's not a bad thing, but it basically only what it does is it, when you set the schedule, it scans to see if it needs to be defragged. Then 9 out of 10 times, with, like you said, with NTFS, it's not going to need it anyways.
Yeah.
So that's what it does. It actually doesn't defrag unless it needs to be defragged.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually have a pretty high threshold. I mean, if you're at 5 or 10% fragmentation, it's not going to defragment your drive, or, you know,
defrag
it. Yeah. It's not going to run.
Yep.
So,
All right,
thanks.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, tell you what, we got to take another short break, but you still got some time to pick up the phones and give us a call here at Jazz 90.1. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-415, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we are here to take your questions. You still got about 15 minutes to get it in. The number to call is 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we had, let's see, it doesn't say the name. But anyways, we had a person text us. And it says, I have an Aries Motorola SB6900 router / modem that has never been updated. When I've gone into the firmware, there never seems to be an update. Am I vulnerable in my router?
I would probably say yes.
Yeah.
if they have never bothered updating it, it's unlikely that there were no problems ever. So it's hard to imagine them not releasing some sort of an update.
Yeah.
Especially for the, what was that, wireless vulnerability a while ago?
Mm-hmm.
The crack vulnerability?
Yep. Yep.
That should have been updated. The latest VPN filter update should probably be updated. So it's unfortunate. So Aries Motorola is a big name company, but do they release firmware for all of their models? They make so many models.
Did you find?
Yeah. It says no driver or firmware is currently available. It is a DOCSIS 3.0.
How old is it?
It's relatively new. It's a DOCSIS 3 AC router.
Okay.
But it's no updates.
All right. Well,
that worries me.
Yeah, but like you said, it is new, so who knows, when it was manufactured, they might have done due diligence and gotten, the cracked software and everything else into the firmware, so they were pretty confident once they rolled it out.
Or I don't see on their list, but it's possible that they update the firmware from their end.
Yeah, and a lot of these hacks, anyways, go after specific brands, like the Linksys,
right,
and that, because they are so popular. They go after, instead of trying just to find the generic ones and weave their way in, because each router is different in the way they handle stuff.
Yep.
And that, and the security and all that other stuff. So maybe that's why there hasn't been an update, because they haven't been hacked or cracked yet. Quote,
yeah.
I'm saying yet.
Yeah.
But I would definitely keep an eye on it and, check periodically. Set yourself a reminder to maybe once a month, just go to that website and see if there's any updates, just in case. Or if you can, go there and say, see if they have a sign up to be notified, yep, if there are any updates for your router. Because it is so new, wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, so that could be the thing that it does have. Although the crack vulnerability is pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to think of already having the
update. But crack, though, if it's going after specific brands.
No, crack was against the Wi-Fi protocol itself.
Oh, okay.
So every router had to be updated for crack. So there's a point. If your router doesn't have an update, it is vulnerable to crack. If your router didn't get a crack update, it is vulnerable to crack.
Yeah. That it hasn't done, at least, or if you've, again, I'd say this to anybody, if you're not if your router is, say, a Linksys, go to their websites and they can notify, they'll be glad to notify you when there are updates. Usually got to go in there and say, yeah, notify me, I've got this particular router in that, and notify me when there are updates.
So I just found a list on Bleeping Computer, which is a cool website for tracking how crappy companies are. they got a quote from an Aris spokesman saying that Aris is committed to security of their devices and the millions of subscribers. The crack flaw affects the WPA2 protocol and is not specific to a device. We will be evaluating our portfolio and release any firmware updates as quickly as possible.
Yep.
So their specific device is not affected. Every device is affected because it's the WPA2 protocol.
Well, I got somebody else just texted in. The thing with cable modems is the user cannot update them.
Yeah.
The DOCSIS standard specifies that updates can only come from the cable company.
Yeah, so that's the cable half of it. The wireless router half of it, often you have to update yourself.
Right.
So the cable modem updates, your cable internet providers should be doing those updates.
Yeah, like Spectrum or
there's
those.
There's very, very, very little way to see if those updates have been done or to do them yourself.
Yep. Yeah, you'd actually have to go into, and I don't recommend this, you know, going into some of the advanced features of the modem where you can see the firmware and everything else if you don't know what you're doing. You know, going into the router, yeah, that's okay as far as setting up the passwords and, you know, like we said, setting up a portal that's, say, a guest that you can control people coming into your network and where they can go and everything else. That's fine. But some of the advanced stuff and all that, if you don't know what you're doing, stay out of it.
Yep.
Or do more reading and become educated on it. Just don't go in there clicking and, turn this on, turn that on. That should be even better. You know, and sometimes you can shut yourself right on out and mess the router totally up.
If you are, I'll post another link here. If you are, and you should be, conscious and aware of your security, one of the things to keep track of is any open ports on your network. And so an open port means there's an opening to the internet so that anyone on the internet can get into your network. Once they can get into your network, they can try to exploit vulnerabilities in your router, vulnerabilities in your IoT camera. GRC, Gibson Research Company that we have talked about frequently, has a service called Shields Up, and that will check all of your common ports to see if you have an open port on your network. And then you can figure out why it's open and try to close it. And one of the things we see is that there is a feature in many routers called UPnP, Universal Plug and Play. It was designed by Microsoft so that Xbox gaming systems can automatically open a port to the internet for gaming. But it also means that any other software on your computer can open a port to the internet and let people in. So it's an extremely easy to exploit vulnerability. And so one of the other tests that they have on the GRC page is a UPnP test to see if your router has UPnP exposed to the internet. And every now and then they do a story, and there are tens of thousands of computers with UPnP exposed to the internet, so that anyone on the internet can get into your router and make changes because it's been told to be able to.
Yeah, and they will. They'll try to get in. And I mean, if not today, maybe down the road. I mean, we can't stress enough, folks. You got to take some precautions. And too many of us get very complacent and, it'll be fine. They don't back up. They don't check for updates. There's a lot of stuff that you should keep up on. It doesn't take a lot of time, and you can set things up to do it automatically, like scanning your computer for spyware and malware and viruses and all that other stuff. It's just sometimes just takes a couple minutes to get it initially set it and taken care of, and then you're good. And that's again why we suggest, like on the super anti-spyware and the malware bytes, you know, paying for those. Because then they can automatically happen in the background, and you can sit back and one less thing that you have to worry about. Just like backing up all your files. Google Drive, you can sit there and Google Backup. Back up a lot of your stuff and have it automatically. So if something happens to your hard drive, you're protected. We can't stress it enough. Backup, backup, backup. Because it's not if your computer is going to crash or die, it's when.
And we joke that they tend to know the worst time to crash. So we're coming into final season for high schools.
Yeah.
We've already gone through college graduation. So now we're coming into high school final season, high school graduation. That term paper you've been writing all term. You have been writing your term paper all term, right? Your computer will suddenly crash and you won't be able to turn it in, and then you won't be able to graduate. You need to have a backup copy of everything. On another drive, and in fact, it's best to have it on two other drives that you put somewhere else. So, you know, fire, flood, theft in your house, you don't lose your computer and your backup drive sitting right next to it.
Well, you know, and again, that thing is electronic. It can die.
It will die.
Yeah, it can die in the most wrong time for you. Critical, you know, that you get something printed or this or that or emailed to them, and it's gone. You know, we can't say it enough.
Something will happen, and you will be the victim?
Yep, the poor victim of it. All right. 2 hours have gone by so fast. Yep. You have, as Nick would say, wasted, I don't think so, 2 hours of your life. But you know what? Hey, I can promise you this. The three of us will be back next Saturday. That's 166 hours from now to answer more of your questions. I'd like to thank Steve Ray here for sitting in, and as we always do, in answering questions and keeping stuff rolling. But you know what? George is coming in next, so you know we got some great music, German music coming aboard. So stay tuned, and we will see you next Saturday right here, member supported Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites. Have a good weekend.